When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's an exciting opportunity for us to now sort of set off in a new direction, play football and create an environment that embodies the values and traditions of this fantastic football club.
Bentancourt!
Through for Pedro Porro,
and he smashed it in!
Oh, that's a great stop from Vicario.
And Kulusevski rolls it in!
Ben Davies!
LaSalle so freshly introduced and scoring! Now skipped!
They tackle Romero. He goes flying in again and wins it. Great work from Romero!
Could this be a chance for Solomon?
That is quite something from James Maddison.
Hello and welcome to The Last Word on Spurs. We are your award-winning Tottenham Hotspur podcast. And if you're listening for the first time, you can find us on iTunes or on Spotify. We're across all major audio platforms. We're of course on X, we are on Instagram, we are on Facebook too. And we are back to review, dissect and break down that 1-1 draw to West Ham United at the London Stadium. Certainly not a classic London derby, I'll be honest and say that. I think all of us definitely have seen better games, that's for sure. But I'm delighted to say I've got three lot of our regular returning panel here that go try and give you their perspective, their thoughts on that game and what it means in, of course, for Spurs. Eight remaining games left of the season in terms of, for Ange, as he keeps saying, are non-interest in terms of Champions League, but ultimately what it means for Spurs in terms of their growth. I'm joined by Lee McQueen. I'm joined by Patrick Tarrant. I'm joined by Jason McGovern on this last one on Spurs. Jace, I'm going to open up with you, mate, if you don't mind. Lovely to have you back on with us. Game itself, Spurs made a fast start with the inform Brennan Johnson tapping home very early on from Werner's cross, but the lack of marking for Zuma's equaliser does need some scrutiny. We'll definitely come on to that. Neither side, I thought, did really enough to win the game. If I have to be honest and say, I thought a draw was a fair result, which is really frustrating for Spurs, who couldn't capitalise on that early lead and missed the chance to move level 1 points with Villa, who have got Man City later on in the week. Jace, your overall feelings from the game, is that a point gained or a point lost?
I think overall it's a point gained. I think they've lost, what, 1-13 at home, West Ham. Our record there in recent years isn't great. They tend to be a little bit more intensity than us in that game. So it's not a bad point. Of course, we wanted to win the game. We go 1-0 up. We get the perfect start. I said before the game, watch out for the corners. And the frustration was he didn't bully us from the corner. It was a free header. So, you know, somebody's not done their job and you've you know, if it comes from a bullying, that's one thing. But to just be a totally free header for Zuma is unforgivable. But, you know, they're seventh in the table, West Ham, aren't they? Seventh in the table. So, you know, you go away to seventh. It's not that bad a point. But the frustration is I just felt with 20 minutes to go, I thought we'd drawn their sting. And it was a great chance for us to go and then win the game. And we just couldn't find a way to do it. Although Udogie had that big chance in the last minute. But overall, it's not a bad point, not what we wanted, but you have to take it and move on, and we're still in good shape for finishing in those top positions.
I thought it was tactically two different teams set up differently, tactically different. Don't get me wrong, I'm disappointed and I'm gutted that we didn't get 3 points, but I think we've seen it all season with Spurs, and it is a transitional season, but I think we've seen it all season with Spurs where we kind of get to the edge of the box and it's not that we don't know what to do, but there's so many teams that are low blocking us in that area. And we can't, you know, lock pick, you know, you always talk about the lock pick and we've got Maddison and, you know, he's not able to do it at the moment either. I thought we started brilliantly. We needed to start like a train. I said that in a group, didn't I, earlier. Let's go get them really quick. And we did. And we did that well. And I think that's the first time we scored in the first half since middle of February, I think, which is actually a crazy statistic itself. But I think it's really hard to take the emotion out of it Jay's put in our WhatsApp group team, viewers and listeners, Jay's put a little vote in our WhatsApp group to say, how would we be voting halfway through the game? Like, would we be, you know, raging? Would we be calm? And most of us said calm. And that's how I feel tonight. I think we haven't won there for five seasons since Jose. I think, Jay, you just said that they haven't lost at home for 13 games. They absolutely They absolutely hate us, and they're always up for it.
Come at you feel a little bit, Barry. It's 1 in 15. I think they've only lost 1 in the last 15. Pat kind of reminds us in the green room, it was the Arsenal game, obviously, in which they got a battering for.
Yeah, they got battered, yeah. So, yeah. Look, I mean, I think it's a point gained. I agree with Jason. I think it's a point gained. I think if we'd have lost tonight, it would have been that would have been tough. You have to go to Anfield or something like that and go and get a win. Because of the points are running out, right? And we want to get that kind of 72, 75 point mark, don't we? But I think the story of Spurs, I think we defended their counter-attack really, really well. I mean, Van de Ven on Antonio, maybe you say he should have scored, but the reality is Van de Ven done enough, put him off, whatever. Vicario, I mean, Giza just makes... I know he got done for the corner, the whole flapping thing, but he makes some serious saves. I mean, there was... two or three saves that were offside. You won't count them as saves, but he still saved them. They were unbelievable saves that he was the goalkeeper. So I think we're in a transitional season. I think we're a young team, like as in together. And I think that we are also young as in age. I think we said it last time around, didn't we? 24.9 or something like that is the average age. Now, I think there's peaks and troughs where you see it with destiny. Sometimes there's wayward passes. It felt like to me tonight that we were fizzing these passes in and really hard, and the player receiving the ball couldn't control it. It was kind of bouncing off him a bit in certain instances. And I did feel the most frustrating thing I feel about the system, about Ange, about the way we're set up is when we've got that front three, whoever is on the pitch, it can be so fluid because at the end of the day, you've got somebody on Werner who's on the left who can go right. You go, Johnson can be on the right, he can go left. Johnson can go down the middle. Son can drift out to the left if he wanted and start attacking his fullback. And they don't do it. They just sit in their areas. And I think for me, that's the issue. Disappointed, there's no doubt. Disappointed that we didn't get the 3 points. But, you know, Jace, you'll laugh at this one. It's a tough place to go, right? It's a tough place to go. So, look, at the end of the day, we know that we need to get better at breaking teams down and scoring goals. At the end of the day, and I think that's what was lacking today. And then, of course, it was guaranteed factual information. You could have put your house on it that they were going to score from a set piece. And that's this point. I'm sure we'll get into that. But look, I think overall, to be going a hyperbolic that we're shambolic and going hyperbole, sensationalizing the fact that we're this and we're that is just over the top. You know, the reality is it was two teams set up differently with two different sets of tactics going at each other. And we did. And, you know, it was a fair result. Let's have it right. It was a fair result. It was 1-1 was the right result in the end. Disappointing, but that's how it is.
You can't deny the fact that 1-1 is the right result and it's fair. I know that you can say there's an injustice in the scoreline. But I think, Pat, that's part of maybe the frustration for some fans that, look, we've given the fact West Ham have lost only once in their last 15 games in all competitions there. Spurs haven't won there for nearly what's becoming now nearly half a decade, as we know. It's been a while since the Mourinho era at Spurs won at West Ham. So, look, as Lee kind of trots it out there, it isn't an easy place to go for Tottenham. They've struggled there. We know how up for it West Ham normally are. And I think the frustration was because Spurs scored so early, West Ham didn't really get going until they scored. And that was the frustration that we never really built on the lead. And I think, again, only from a lot of the comments that we have here, as we obviously recalled live in the show, the frustration is that Spurs really didn't seem to do enough and take those opportunities and be more clinical. And I think we can definitely understand, look, that word project is used a lot. And I understand why it's being used. It is the first season under Ange. Totally get that for sure. But I think if we're here next season and we're saying the same things as this, I think there would be an element of concern because we're hopefully season on where we've gone into the window, we've got what we needed, and hopefully we're going to be in a position next season to win these kind of games. Is that fair for me to say, Pat?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really frustrating result, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, we all wanted to win. Business end of the season, every game, you know, the games are running out and every game means something, it means a lot more. But you know, when I sit back and think about it, at any stage during the season, if you go away to the London Stadium and you get a draw of West Ham, you're not really, you're annoyed, you're frustrated, you don't win. But you just say, you know what, cool, you picked up a point and you move on. Obviously, because we had a chance to potentially go level on points with Aston Villa or go above them if we scored, if we won by more than a two-goal margin, you know, you're looking at the table, you're a bit frustrated again because of that. But listen, it was a really interesting game. I'm seeing a lot of comments on social media and Twitter, and people are going a bit crazy. And I think they're doing a bit too much. It's a tough game, man. West Ham are a decent team on the day. And it was two different, very different styles of football. Yes, we had a lot of the ball. Yes, we tried to break them down. They defended really well and resolute. And unfortunately, we just didn't have that cutting edge in the final third to really unlock them. You know, we had a couple of shots on target, but I didn't really see Sonny and the attackers really test their goalkeeper or just have enough time to get on off a good shot. The only shots I remember on target was one from Pedro Porro, which was quite tame, and another one at the end from Destiny Adoji, which again was quite tame, and you're expecting the goalkeeper to save it. So, you know, frustrating. They did what they needed to do to get a point. They packed us out on corners. They had a lot of corners, which was really concerning, and we did look a bit shaky whenever they had a set piece. But all in all, I personally think it's a good point. Obviously, we need to win games, but at the end of the day, you know, you don't lose them if you can't win them. And yeah, it's frustrating, don't get me wrong, but I don't think it's as bad as people are making it out to be. It is a lot of these guys, you know, it's Ange's first season. I think he probably made a few mistakes as well. I was really... I don't know, not disappointed.
Because I think many are saying just in the substitutions were a little bit frustrating.
I just didn't understand why Werner stayed on to like the... Let me, just so I don't get this wrong, because I made a note of it. Werner stayed on to the 81st minute. I thought he was shit. I thought he was shit, I'm not going to lie. Yeah, he got an assist. But other than that, he was awful. I even saw Madison shouting at him. Just simple passes. He was passing the ball out of bounds, fizzing at people way too hard. I just didn't think he was good today. And I just don't understand how Ange couldn't see that and get him off. Like he was the reason why a lot of the attacking play broke down, and he just wasn't good enough. You know, I don't understand. Madison getting hooked, I really didn't understand it. I didn't think, again, people going crazy saying he didn't have a good game. I thought he played well. I don't really understand. Like he was picking the ball up from deep, getting on the ball, he was making things happen. I thought him, Bentancur and Bissouma had a really good first half. They were really playing well together, dictating and controlling the tempo of the game. All in all, I don't think we played that badly, personally. I just don't. The only frustration is that we just didn't create enough clear-cut chances. Without scapegoating people, I didn't think Werner had a good game, and I just don't understand how he played so long. That was it, personally. I think that's enough for now, because I let everyone else get their say in. But, yeah.
I agree, though. Can I interact on that, Rick? I completely agree. I think that we were saying in the group, Frank and I was having a chat in the group after the last game, and about Ange's substitutions, and actually gets him right more often than not. I think tonight he got him completely wrong. Like, it's not necessarily the personnel that came on. It was the timings of them.
Yeah,
I don't understand how Werner was on the pitch for that long. I mean, you know, with great respect, he could have come off at half time. You wouldn't notice no different. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of him, I think, you know, when you've got Richie on there that you know that can back into defenders, you had Zuma and Pavel Mavropanos. I've absolutely murdered his name, sorry.
Mavropanos.
You know, it's so difficult for a player like Son to go up, and he's not that type of striker. He's an in-behind striker. He's not a header-type striker. He's not a hold-the-ball-up type striker. I mean, there was a moment in the second half when the ball was played long, which we don't ever do that often, to Son. And I think it was actually Zuma that went across with Son. I'm thinking, if that's Kane, that's a free kick. Like, Kane's going to win a free kick. Son just can't do that. It's okay. I'm not having a go at Son, but he just can't do it. So that's what I was frustrated with, is like, Ange always talks about the players when they're on the pitch. They've got a structure that they need to be in, but that player doesn't have to stay there as long as the structure's still there. So why don't the players work out that actually Werner can drop to the right or Sonny can go left? Why did he just why did he not bring on Richie earlier to be able to bully, for want of a better expression, their centre-backs? Because I think that's what it needed in the game. That's, again, I'm not Ange, but I'm just watching the game like all of us, right? All the viewers and listeners, right? And I'm looking at that, I'm thinking, that's what should happen. And I totally agree with Pat on that. I actually think, like, Madders going off, Kulusevski coming on, didn't affect the game at all. It didn't do one thing that affected it. And again, I'm not out for Deki. I absolutely love Deki, but he didn't do anything. He didn't affect the game. He didn't affect the game. Werner's substitute didn't affect the game. Højbjerg coming on, you know, was shoring things up. Like Bentancur took a knock. He had a yellow card. I kind of get that. But actually, last game around, you know, the substitutes affecting the game. Do you know what I mean? The substitutes in the, I think it was a Sheffield United game back in the day, affecting the game. Like, these ones just didn't affect the game.
I think it's really fair to say that and bring you in, Jace, because I think that's the element of it. I think many would have actually suggested the subs that were made were the right subs, but the timing is the ultimate frustration. And just on Maddison, I think, you know, when you look at that game and how it was playing out, Maddison at that point, I think, had been by far our best attacking player. He was controlling elements of the game. I think that's the one thing I would say, that I was never in real danger or fear Spurs would lose the game. My concern was, would we do enough to win it? And I think that is the ultimate frustration. Can you understand, Jace, that element of anger and frustration around the timing of the subs from Ange?
As both of them have just said, I thought Richie should have been on a lot earlier than he was. I think with Maddison's case, we know he's got this ankle problem that he continues to have, and it may well, it more or less came off at the same time. It may well be that they think if he goes 90 minutes, he's in danger of missing two or three games on the back end of that. That's where that ankle starts flaring up, is around about 70, 75 minutes. And therefore, do you leave him on for those 15 minutes and then miss him for three or four games? Or do you think, look, you know, we told you, Maddison may well know that before the game. You're going to have to give us 70 minutes, and it's one of those almost pre-timed ones. I fear that that's probably the case with Madders at the moment, that he's not training properly. We know that from one or two people that are in the group, and I think that's the Maddison's problem at the moment. So it's not that they're taking him off because he's not playing well. It's just a case of a little bit of protection for wanting him for Forest, where we've got a game in 3 or 4 days' time. But, I thought Richie should have been much earlier. I felt the two centre-halves of West Ham had too much of an easy night. Sonny was pretty much ineffective for them. We know Sonny's got plenty of goals against them, but it is, as Lee says, it's the running behind that Sonny thrives on against West Ham, and there just wasn't the opportunity to do that. But I just felt there was a couple of balls fizzed across the box, and it was up to somebody to gamble to get on the end of them, and unfortunately we didn't do that. And frustration was, that's how we scored our goal. So, you know, we did it in 5 minutes and then didn't do it for the next 80 or 95 minutes or whatever. So, but, you know, it's not it's not a bad point at West Ham. It's something to take from it. We haven't lost the game, which I feared for that little spell just after half-time, 10 minutes or so after half-time, I could see us conceding a goal and then we wouldn't have got back into it. So, you know, we draw that. In the end, it was quite a comfortable last 15, 20 minutes for us. They didn't create... I thought they'd score from at least two corners today. I just thought they'd bully Vic and they'd be a bundle type of corner that they'd score from. So we got away with that. And overall, we take the point, and now we just have to beat Forest on... And if you beat Forest on Saturday or on Sunday, then you're looking at 7 points out of nine from the week. That's not too bad a return, is it?
I think the problem we've got always is the nature of the fixtures now is that there is that element to it where... game to game, you're having to look at what the other opposition does. And for example, if Villa do go and pull out a result against Man City, suddenly it doesn't look a good result, which again, I think you've got to bear in mind the fact Spurs have still got City and of course Chelsea to be rescheduled in terms of their fixtures. We're not sure where they're going to drop. But I think, look, there's the element of rightly to be frustrated, because I think the frustration I can feel is that there was a lot of what I would say short, safe passing from Spurs to the latter half of that second half where... You know, if you're going to win games, it is about, as Ange says, being brave, taking risks. I just don't think Spurs did that enough during that game. And look, we totally understand West Ham have got a decent home record. And I think it tells you a lot that David Moyes didn't make a change until the 85th minute of the game and threw on Danny Ings, which tells you what his feeling was, that the game for them was going exactly how they wanted it to, because they didn't make a change to very, very late. Now, Ange just said in his post-match presser that James Maddison coming off for two consecutive games in a row is a tactical one, nothing more than that. Pat, is it just a case with Maddison where we've got to just try and get him back into the rhythm that we saw at the first part of the season? Because there's no doubt about it, as we always reference, that first 8-9 games, he was most certainly one of those players that you could ultimately rely on to create a chance. He obviously was nicknamed the lock picker when he came in from us. Will he find that form between now and the end of the season, Patty?
Definitely. I thought he was good today, personally. It's not every day you're going to pull off an assist or do something amazing, but he was really solid. He was making things happen. He was dropping deep. He was getting on the ball. I thought, personally, like, to be fair, most players had a good game. Like, Romero was, you know, breaking lines with his passing, pushing the ball up. Mickey van der Ven was good on the ball. But going back to Maddison, I thought he was good. It's just one of those frustrating days where, unfortunately, we just didn't have enough quality in the final third to get that second or third goal. But all in all, you know, other than Timo Werner and maybe Son to a degree because he was ineffective, but I wouldn't say Son had a bad game. I didn't think Werner was good every time he got the ball. I thought Maddison was really good on the ball, and so were the other guys. And frustratingly, yes, you know, nothing came off in the end, but I thought he was good. He looked frustrated and annoyed when he came off. You could see he wanted to carry on and play. But maybe what Jace is saying is right, and we've just got to manage his minutes, and we'd rather have him pay 60 or 70 in every game than do the full 90 and aggregate or flare up, you know, ligaments or damage something in the ankle. So it's a tough one. It's frustrating. I know, you know, as the game has literally just happened and everyone's feeling a bit, you know, the emotions are still a bit raw and everyone's blood's still boiling. But when you take a look at it, I personally think it was a decent point. Frustrating that we didn't get three. Of course, we want to, you know, get three. But I'm seeing people saying, oh, it's embarrassing. You know, we only picked up 1 point from West Ham all season. We've got no divine right to beat anyone. Mm-hmm. And West Ham are not a crap team. They're a decent team. Like, at the end of the day, if they come to play football, and they played their brand of football, it's not the most entertaining. They knew what they wanted to do. They wanted to lock us down, yep, make things hard for us, and attack us on the counter. We were very lucky that Antonio didn't score that one-on-one. That was a massive chance. Yep. Mickey van der Ven probably just did enough and Vicario stayed big because they could have nicked that game. So it's fine margins, you know, at the very top. I don't know. It's frustrating. Of course it is. But I didn't, other than, and again, I don't even really want to scapegoat Timo Werner because obviously he did do something that helped us, you know, score the goal. He created an assist. But I thought personally, I thought Bissouma was really good today. Bentancur looked really good. All in all, I thought everyone had a good game, apart from a lapse in concentration. I think it was Mickey van der Ven that let the guy who's Kurt Zouma in for the header. I think if you watch it back, Mickey van der Ven fell asleep and allowed him to waltz in behind, and obviously had a free header. But other than that, I thought everyone played quite well. But sometimes you just have these days where you just don't have enough quality in a final third and it just doesn't go your way. So it's frustrating, but I think it's just one of those days.
You know, when you've got such a cagey game like that with too many safe passes to some degree, I think that's why I think many, you know, will look at it next season and will feel like that's a game Spurs should really be taking control of, going to win the game. And then again, it comes down to the point of what are Spurs going to do in that summer transfer window? Are they going to go and essentially try and improve the squad? Or are they going to go and try and actually essentially improve the 11 that they've done, obviously, this summer, or the one just gone? Because you just see the way Vicario walks in the side, Mickey van der Ven walks in the side, James Maddison walks in the side. You know, I think it's really important Spurs look at the actual first 11 and try and improve on that, which I'm sure Andrew's already stated he wants to do. They're looking at number sixes, obviously, of course, the number eight role. David Moyes said after the game, I think the draw was probably a fair result. We should have showed more defensive. I think we showed more defensive resilience than the previous weekend against a very, very good Tottenham team. And he went, if you'd given me 4 points off Spurs at the start of the season, I'd have shaken your hand and said, thank you very much. Which again, just sums up for West Ham, just how pleased they are. They've taken 4 points off Spurs this season. And just said after the game, I'm always looking at this as a performance that shows we're developing. I thought it was better than Fulham. Similar type of game, which we didn't handle tonight, especially in our general play organisation. I thought Biss was outstanding and the back four handled everything that came at them and didn't really cause the team too many problems. I thought there was more structural maturity than against Fulham. We want to win, but there's enough to say this team is still heading in the right direction, which seems to really kind of mirror you guys' thoughts there in the opening segment of this show. So look, what we are going to do, we are going to go for our first break of the show for our listeners and audio.
And how do you view that point on the road?
Tough. As expected. They're a big, strong team and you know, they sit pretty deep and compact, and you have to be really sort of patient in your football. I thought for the most part we controlled the game pretty well. We obviously got a great start with a great goal, and you know, they're always going to be a threat from set pieces. Again, they're a big, strong team. You know, we're disappointed we copped one, but I thought the rest of them we handled quite well. And then probably just our decision-making in the final third, because I thought we got into some good areas, and we just, that final decision we made, that didn't help us. But, you know, it was, like I said, it's a tough game.
You made changes in the second half. The intensity of that game tonight, did it feel like it still could have gone either way, right down to the wire?
Yeah, to a certain extent. Like I said, I always felt like we were in control. They're always going to be a threat on the counter-attack and transition, but I thought we handled that pretty well. You know, I don't think they really hurt us in any moment. But as you said, it was a lot of high energy. That both teams sort of left it all out there, particularly when you think of the short turnaround. And, you know, we're obviously disappointed not to win, but, you know, it's a tough place to come to and win, so we'll take what we've got.
Do you think it'll give the team confidence going forward that you can come somewhere that is very difficult and take something away?
Yeah, to a certain extent. We're not, you know, we still want to be a team that kind of comes to plays like this and wins games of football playing our way. But like I said, I think for the most part it was okay tonight. The effort was there. Like I said, in the front third, we just needed to be a little bit more clinical. And anyway, it's an area of the park we still need to improve.
Brennan Johnson came off at the end there. He looked a little uncomfortable walking. Have you got an update on that? Is he all right?
Yeah, no, I think he's all right. It was just a knock. I think it was from the set piece. But, yeah, I think, knock on wood, but I think everyone got through it pretty well considering two games in a short space of time.
Lovely. Ange, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Joined by Lee McQueen, Jason McGovern and Patrick Tyrant on this last one on Spurs. Guys, I want to quickly dive into, if I can, the lineup for this one. Spurs, you know, actually made three changes for the game, which I think going into it maybe might surprise some people because Spurs generally seem to keep a consistent lineup. But obviously we saw for Tottenham the return of Mickey van der Ven back in the team after being a new substitute on Saturday, having recovered from that hamstring injury. He replaced Radu Dragosin in that central back line. Ange decided to bring in Brennan Johnson into his starting lineup after another impressive display from the bench against Luton. It was Kulusevski, the man, being taken off at half-time for the Welsh international, and he made way for him in terms of the lineup. There was no new injuries, as Ange stated, and it gave the opportunity for Rodrigo Bentancur to come in and Pat Matasar a rest. There are reports that Pat Matasar at the moment is in a period of fasting, along with that back injury that is being managed as it can be by Spurs. So that team for Tottenham, Red Vicario, Porro Romero, Van der Ven, Adoghi, Bentancur, Bissouma, Maddison, Johnson, Son, Werner, with a bench of Austin Davis, Emerson, Dragosin, Højbjerg, Sarr, Lo Celso, Kulu, Richarlison. Jace, coming over to you for the team. Any surprises there? Three straight changes for this game?
I was a little bit surprised to see Sarr miss out, I must admit. I thought he's the one that's shown the most energy and the most intensity in recent weeks. And for this game, you definitely wanted it. So I was a little bit surprised to see him miss out, whereas perhaps Bissouma hasn't been that great of lately, and it wouldn't surprise me if Bentancur had come in for him. But obviously, Ange was pleased with Bissouma tonight. I think Johnson was pushing for a start, wasn't he, after his performance against Luton. And I think once Van der Ven's fit, Van der Ven's always going to start and bring that pace that we know he's got. So, you know, probably for me would have been Sarr instead of Bissouma, but it's not a million miles away from the side that I would have picked, for sure.
Spurs at the moment under Ange, you can guarantee there's going to be maybe a change of the wingers here in these final remaining eight games for Spurs to come. We'll look to freshen things up, of course, with Forest at the weekend. And again, we're in a bit of a week where we've got three games, where I think, you know, weeks like this generally seem to shape what the rest of the season looks like, which again, I think the elements of why there is that frustration on the back of that West Ham result is you have three games in a week where you can ultimately shape your own destiny. And now again with Spurs, it does feel like we're in the hands of other results. If I will just suggest, and if it is, Champions League is what you all want. If it's not all what you want, it's about the growth of the team. You're not too concerned at the moment. So again, it depends what category you're in as opposed to your feelings in terms of between now and the rest of the season. Maka, coming over to you. Spurs scored within 4 minutes. Yes, they scored in the first half. That's unbelievable, right? And to be fair, it was what Ange would probably call a goal that would be classic under his tenure of managing club. Spurs breaking up the pitch. Werner got a lovely low ball across the six-yard box. There was Brennan Johnson. Right place, right time to tap in. It was Spurs' first half goal first since Everton away, as you said, Lee, on February the 3rd. Their previous 12 goals had all been in the second half. Have we finally broken the curse, Lee? And is this now the start of goals in the first half of games?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you're talking about goals. I mean, yeah, it's crazy stat, isn't it, that we haven't scored in the first half since February. And actually the early part of February as well. Just under Ange, for people that are saying that this isn't sustainable and, you know, Ange needs to go and, you know, all these sensationalised opinions, like after one game, we didn't even lose it. At this stage of the season, I've just gone back where you guys are talking. So you don't need to verify this because it comes straight out of the blue book. Here it is.
Verified.
We've scored 62 Premier League goals at this stage of the season. That is more than any other time in the last 12 seasons. So when people start criticising, that's how far that we've come on. Like, who are we comparing ourselves to at the moment? This is a brand new manager with a brand new team who sold our star striker, and we've scored more goals. So Kane's not here. And we've scored more goals at this stage of the season in a Premier League season than in the last 12 seasons. I mean, just let that sink in. Say, oh, we can't score. It is frustrating. This is what we need to be looking forward to, because it's coming. Like, it's not going to just fall off a cliff next season. You know, it's actually going to get even better. Do you see where I'm coming from? So, yes, it's frustrating today. And yes, it's really annoying that we didn't get the 3 points and whatever. But 62 goals today, as we talk, under Ange is the highest goal return at this point in the season for the last 12 seasons in the Premier League. Oh, I think that's incredible. Now, part of the issue is that we let in goals at the other end as well. And that's ultimately why we're not further up the table. But we're not that far. Look, I'm not going to say could we, right? Not right, because you will give me penalties. But we're not that far. Good, Pat. We're not that far off of being, we're competitive, right? And we're not that far off of being where we should be. There's been some really bad results. I don't think today was a really bad result. The Fulham game was an absolute travesty. I'm not even over that. You know, the Wolves game as an example at home. You know, the cup exits as an example. But today wasn't one of them. But in Poch's first season, when he started to take us on a journey, getting us to semi-finals, getting us to finals, getting us to Champions League final, two title challenges. Jace is nodding because he knows what I'm going to say, because we say it all the time when we talk to each other. You always get ups and downs. You get a game where you go and pulverise a team, Aston Villa, 0-4, unbelievable game, prime Barcelona, smashed them. And then the next week we get done by Fulham, and then we have a tricky game against Luton that we come through, and then we have a draw against West Ham. It's not the end of the world. And everything that I'm seeing on the pitch tactically, there's a lot of people in the comments, by the way, for the listeners to on their commute tomorrow, talking about backwards, sideways, boring football. I get it. I do. I understand where you're coming from on that side of things, because, you know, I've been at the games this season and all I've been saying is, shoot, have a shot. Like, why are you not having a shot?
Same with this game as well. Same with this game.
Yeah, and it was. I do agree with that. Yep. But I think it's a case of getting into them positions and pulling the trigger, or getting better technical players. I don't know. I mean, Basuma, I agree with Ange. Actually, I thought Basuma played well today. I thought Bentancur, Basuma, Madison in that midfield was actually quite good, very technical, between the three of them. But it is pulling that trigger. It's creating them chances. Like Jay said earlier, we had a couple of, I think it was three, maybe even five, but it was definitely three or four crosses that flashed across the box, of which one we scored from. Why aren't we gambling? You know, if there is another striker in there, if there's a Richie in there, like, dare I say it, if there's a Kane in there, that's not 1-1 today. So we are creating, there is stuff there. We're just not getting it absolutely bang on. When we do get it bang on, there is a team that's going to take an absolute beating. And I think that when we do get it bang on and we get it and the penny drops, next season, I think, could be very, very, very strong for us. So, you know, you got to look at it in again, just spitting some more facts, because they are facts. No one can disagree with the facts, right? Because they are facts. In Pep Guardiola's first season with Man City, he, with the oil company, with the oil money, just putting out there, like, lots and lots of money, not Daniel Levy's, right? not scrimping on Timo Werner signings and worst goalkeeper signings for 12 million. Yeah, not them. Proper money. Pep's first season, he finished 8 points behind Tottenham in third. Yeah, 8 points behind Tottenham, 15 points off the top of the table. When you look at Arsenal and the progression that they're going, and no one likes talking about that lockdown of Odin, this, that and the other, they spent 100 million on Declan Rice, and you could argue they've regressed. They've got worse points total than they did at this stage last season. They've got a worse goals ratio in terms of their goal difference, only plus three. That's because they killed, weirdly enough, West Ham and Sheffield United in two games. They've lost more games than they did this time last season. They were 22 points in front of us last season. At this stage of the season, Arsenal were. And now they're only nine. You know, that's progression from Tottenham. Or you could argue regression from Arsenal. But the point being is, no one can sit here and tell me that we haven't got better than we were last season. You know, Arteta's first season, he finished eighth. Klopp was on the ropes, you know, like the sliding doors moment with the Lovren and the 4-1 at Wembley. All of this stuff you have to take into consideration. And every single one, if you go back and you won't want to do it because you want them to do the work, but you go back and look at the stats, look at what them teams did, them top managers did at their clubs in their first season, second seasons, it'd be very similar. And that's why I'm excited. I'm excited for the season to come and the season after that, because we've got a gem of a manager and we've got a young team and it's progressive. And you think we were all sitting here last season after Conte Danny's rant at Southampton, and we was all sitting there thinking this is absolute turgid. The football we watch today, you might say it's backwards cyber. It ain't turgid. What we was watching last season under Stellini was utter turgid. This is good stuff. This is probing. This is looking. This is something that's got a plan at the end of it. This is not turgid, right? This is not long ball, hit and hope, hit Kane, hit Son on the break. Nothing like that. This is probing, ducking, diving. We're not getting it right, but when we do, hell of a beating. A hell of a beating is coming.
I hear what you're saying, Lee. I've said it a number of times on air. I just feel because of the nature of we had that incredible start to the season, the 8-9 games run that we did. I think, again, I said this, you know, if you flipped it and you had this run now at the start and you were having those kind of results, you know, middle of the season towards the end of it, there'd be a completely different feel around it. But because, again, expectations were raised so high from that start, and because it was an incredible start, and, you know, even in those games, those 8-9 games, we're all on here saying that opposition teams were getting chances. They were getting chances. Whether you like it or not, they were getting chances. But the reality is Spurs were, you can say, however you want to say it, clinical. They got a bit of luck in terms of some decisions going their way. And I think it's just the frustration that we haven't really seen the side hit that heavy height as they did in the opening 8-9 games of the season.
Definitely frustrating, mate, for sure. Yeah. Definitely.
And look, no one's trying to, you know, no one's trying to blind you with the fact that, you know, what you're seeing out there is a reality of it is being a fairly young team, adapting to a new style, adapting to a new manager. You know, there are games where, like say tonight, it is frustrating because you do feel if Spurs have been a bit more clinical, less cagey in the final third, took their foot or placed their foot on the accelerator, there is a game that you feel Spurs could win. And I mean, look,
you've also got to say West Ham had chances to win it as well. They'll sit there and think Vicario's made more saves than Fabianski, so they'll feel that they should have won the game.
No, it was three saves each. It feels like there was more saves because Vicario made some saves, but they were deemed offside. So, yeah. But in terms of the actual statistics, it was three saves each. But I hear what you're saying, Jace, because I mean the biggest chance in the game was Antonio.
The bigger save. I mean, Fabian's straight at him each time. That's it.
But to be fair, we should have won it. Destiny Adoji had a clear shot. That's a clear chance, and he should have just. I mean, obviously, you know, he's a fullback, his first season, he's not a finisher, but you have to place that in either one of the corners and it's a goal. You know, it was a chance.
But Antonio will feel he had a great chance to win it.
I know. I hear you.
He should score before we score. You know, they had big chances as well. So, you know, the draw was the right result. It is what it is. You just have to take that one. And like I say, it's not a bad result there.
I think, the element of that frustration is it's a game that you've just seen West Ham, with no disrespect, they've gone to Newcastle, they've lost 4-3, and you just feel that's an opportunity maybe to catch them. But you can't disagree with the fact they've got one of the best front four individual players in the league. You look at their front four, that is a really good front four. I'm not trying to butter people up here or trying to make them feel better on that result. They have got a decent front four. Is it an amazing team? No. Is it a team that every next season I'd expect to beat? Yes, it is. And am I disappointed with the result? Yeah, I am. I'll be honest, I am disappointed with the result. I take a point. I get it. I understand it. Can I be frustrated? Yeah, I can be. But you have to warrant the fact West Ham, as I think, Jason, you've said it there, Pat, as well, they had the bigger chance to win the game. And could you imagine? I mean, look, we're frustrated now we didn't win it. Can you imagine if we lost it, what we'd be like? I mean, it would just be off the scale. I mean, I do always talk about Brennan Johnson just for a second, guys. I mean,
the thing is, if that song going through or Werner or Johnson's going through like Antonio, if that one-on-one, we would be going ballistic.
Yeah.
We'd be going absolutely ballistic at them. And the fact that it's Antonio that's hurt us so often... You expect Antonio to, once he's got the ball off of Van de Ven, you think he's going to score.
Yeah.
Difference is that if that's Song going through, that we're scoring.
Like, we're scoring that, yeah.
As much as the sun rises in the morning, we're going to score. Yeah. If it was Werner, as much as the sun rises in the morning, he's probably putting it wide.
Yeah. Can I just say one thing? Just got to mention Brennan. I do just want to bring Brennan Johnson into play because many, again, have looked at Johnson and said, needs to score in the big games. I mean, I don't know what you guys think. I do count West Ham away as a big game to go and score in, and he scored at West Ham away. So, I mean, Pat, I'll ask you about Brennan Johnson. He's now been directly involved in 7 goals in his last 9 appearances, 4 goals, 3 assists. That's now 12 Premier League goal involvements for the season. Is he continuing to maybe silence some doubters? We know there's big games on the horizon, or does he still need to keep on proving it, Pat, in those big games to come?
Nah, you know, I've been defending Brennan Johnson all season, even when he was going through his poor patch. I said there was a player in there. I also put the context into play that, you know, last year was his first year in the Premier League. He came up with a newly promoted team who obviously were fighting relegation. He was one of the standout players, got a big move to Spurs, obviously 50 million, 48.7, whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of pressure on him to come in and perform. Probably played a bit more than we all would have expected because of the injuries and everything that happened. But the guy's clearly showing that he's got something about him. You know, I think it's now 27 games, 5 goals, 7 assists. That's what, 12 goal contributions in your rookie season at a big team, being rotated as well. It's not a guaranteed starter. Today he got the goal that obviously allowed us to get a point. The guy's a player, man. He's a good player. And he looked dangerous whenever he got the ball, tried a few things. He's, you know, he's not a one trick pony like some people are saying. He can link up, he can go around the outside, needs to work on his shooting, but he's definitely got a lot of room for potential. I like him. I've always liked him. And I'm glad now that there's end product to what he's doing. He also created a few good chances where someone should have gambled. And it really frustrated me. And that's when I talk about Timo Werner. He just was static in the box. He's not a striker. But if Richarlison was there, or even if Son was on the end, they're gambling. They're trying to throw something at it. And he created some good chances that no one really took a dive or took something to try and gamble and potentially win that game. So I thought Brennan Johnson did as much as he could do. I think he's a good player. I don't understand why he was getting so much stick early on in the season. I mean, the guy even had to turn his social media comments off, which is insane.
Yeah, yeah.
Your own fans abusing you to that nature is mental.
That's a great point. Can I just say, listen, Adrian Nitz is here, but Pat, you come and respond. I'll ask the guys to respond. Adrian, you're standing here. Sorry, I might have butchered that. Adrian, please accept my apologies. Says, how often are we saying if Son was in that position to score, how do we get Son into these positions, Pat?
Honestly, sorry, Pat, come back in.
No, go ahead.
I brought this up a couple of shows ago because I watched the Heung-min Son Premier League 100 goals like on Sky. You know, it was just on one night and I was watching it. And he does not score bad goals, this fella. I mean, and then there was a guy, I'll dig his name out in a minute, who was on it, actually did a thread on Son's top 10 goals. And they're unbelievable, like top bins every time. And then you've got Puskas goal, of course, right? The reality is, how do you get him in them positions? And I saw him and even Deki today in the positions they scored against Norwich at. And I use Norwich as a really good example. It was the end of the game. It was amazing atmosphere. He was going for the golden boot. Top bins. The Leicester, left foot, bang, top bin. Right foot, bang, top bin. This is Sonny, right? Madison, he used to do it against us for Leicester all the time, top bins. Where are these shots? Where are they? Because, you know, what you've got to be able to do, I think, tactically, and who am I? who the hell am I to talk about this tactically to Ange's team? But what I think you've got to do tactically is use your fullbacks that are coming in as their number 10s to move, to create some space. Now, Johnny Wilkinson used to do this in England rugby back in the day. That's how we won the World Cup back in 2003. The team would work a position to get Johnny Wilkinson in position for him to kick a field goal, right, or whatever it's called. And that's what we need to be able to get Maddison or Son in a position where they can hurt teams, you know. And Werner is a classic example of, you know, not taking on his man today. I don't think I saw him take on his fullback once. Soufal was just like, yeah, happy days, man. He'd played like 48 games or whatever. He should be absolutely knackered. Werner's got pace to burn by all accounts. He didn't even take him in once. And the point I'm making is that, you know, when the balls are being flashed across the box, there's no centre forward in there. So they're doing cutbacks. Some of them cutbacks are kind of cut back behind the person because they've overrun it. So if that's the situation, you've got to get Son and or Maddison and or Kulusevski with pings of them foot, Pedro Porros, in them positions where they can hit top bins 25 yards out, 20 yards out, because they can score 100%. But they never, ever, when was the last time Madders had a shot like he scored against Burnley? When Madders scored against Burnley, it's a brilliant goal, wasn't it? Right? 25 yards. Yeah. When Pedro Porros scored against Burnley in the FA Cup, absolute rocket. He's had more shots and hasn't scored in the Premier League than anyone else. I think that was a stat that Fletcher had on TNT Sports, and I can believe that. He's had more shots than any other player.
Yeah, it was 30 shots when Fletch announced it, and I think he had two or three shots today. So it's 33 shots now and zero goals. So it's a poor return. And even today, I mean, that shot he had on target, it was a tame shot. It's the one you expect the keeper to say. So I love Pedro Porro. I think he's a brilliant player. But again, he needs to obviously just be a bit more clinical with his shooting, Boots. And going back to the question, the reality is that we're not going to get Son in those positions because he's not that type of player. That's the reality of it. Son's not someone that's going to, like, literally, you know, stay on the last man and or the line of the last defenders and gamble for crosses. That's not Son's game. What Son's game is good is, like Lee said, is picking the ball up from deep or just outside the box and whipping it top bins, left or right foot, or getting the ball and running and taking a great shot one-on-one with the keeper and not nine times out of ten tucking it away. So Son's not that type of player, but Richarlison is. And if Ange was reading the game and seeing how it was going, you would have taken Werner off and got Richarlison in, because Richarlison will gamble and be in those positions to tuck that ball away. So it's just reading the game and understanding it. And the reason why Son and Maddison aren't getting those shots off is because if you look at how teams are defending now, they're just crowding out the box.
Yeah.
And we just need to be a bit cuter and a bit smarter. That's why I was saying I thought Romero was really good, because he was breaking lines. He was holding onto the ball a bit longer and then picking a pass. And he really distributed the ball quite well, left to right, right to left. But then other players just weren't, I don't know, the link-up play wasn't at 100% today. But I just feel as well, players know what we're going to do now. Teams have adapted to how we play, so we do need to switch it up a bit. We had all the ball, and I didn't think we played that badly personally, but like Lee was saying, we just didn't really get off any clear-cut chances. You didn't really see Son or Maddison or whoever really have a good crack on goal, you know, and a free effort. So there needs to be a few tweaks. Ange needs to, you know, this is where Ange, you know, obviously earns his money, and tweak things a bit so that players do have the same time and space that they had at the beginning of the season. As, you know, the best managers adapt as things, you know, Pep, Arteta had to put him in there at the moment, Klopp. These guys, every manager knows how they're going to play and what they're going to do, but they tweak it every year slightly and they get it right. And that's how you adapt and change. And at the moment, we are a bit too predictable. You can have 80% of the ball, 70%, but if you're only having three shots on target, four shots on target, and most of them aren't clear cut, something needs to change.
Are we getting found out, Jason, a certain degree, because we are seeing games are taking us later to go and win them? I mean, you look at the first, again, I'm sorry to keep reverting back to those first 8-9 games. It felt a lot more fluid. It felt a lot more easier, if I can put it that way. Is there an element where teams have now cottoned onto the way Spurs are playing, and we are finding it naturally harder to break these teams down because teams know we're going to set up and know we're going to play to some degree?
Well, definitely. But, you know, this thing about being found out, most teams get found out very quickly in the Premier League. You're not going to go 30, 40 games with all the amount of statistical analysis and data analysis and set piece analysis and things like that without top coaches working out, oh, that's how Tottenham, Gary O'Neill could work us out, Luton can work us out, Nottingham Forest, Nuno will have worked us out. But similarly, I mean, not being funny, I put on Twitter this morning exactly how West Ham would play. So I sussed West Ham out. It's not that you've been sussed out. Manchester City, we know how Manchester City play. We know how Arsenal play. We know how Klopp's play for 8 years. It's not a weakness to be sussed out. Every team susses you. You can perhaps catch a surprise for 3 or 4 games when new players are signed in the summer. But I think most teams have been sussed out by the time October comes, Rick, to be honest. At the level of Premier League and the analysis that goes on, everyone's sussed out.
I don't like bringing up referees because, you know, again, it kind of evades the point that we haven't done enough to win the game. But it did feel the referee, Jace. I'm not asking the right person. I know you don't like normally commenting or criticising referees, but there was a numerous amount of cases in that game where Paqueta, or Lee's happy to come in for it. Paqueta a number of times just seemed to be fouling consistently without a booking. Can you understand? I mean, am I digging at the referee here, or was that a bit of a bad refereeing performance at times in that game?
He did get away with persistent fouling, for sure. I mean, he made about 15 at Wembley last week and still got away with it. So, but, I mean, he is like that, a little bit like Bruno at Newcastle as well. They seem to get away with a hell of a lot. But, you know, it's just frustrating because if he does get booked for it, it might well stop him making the next one and the next one. But that's part of the problem as well. When you're trying to play well and you're constantly getting a niggly foul, as you're looking to get your feet up, looking to make the pass clattered into him. The one on Maddison at the edge of the box that they break from was ridiculous. It was literally just bundled him over, almost jumped on his back, and they've gone down the other end and almost scored from it. So, I mean, thank God that didn't go in because that would have been uproar. But that was typical of the type of foul he was making all night.
It was like a rugby tackle, and the bloke just let the play on. And if Antonio had put that in the back of the net, and he weren't good enough, obviously, to stick it in the back of the net, to be fair, let's have that right. And again, Vicario makes save after what he does. But it was an unbelievable foul. It was just blatant foul, right foul. And the thing is about that is it was in the, you know, I don't know what you call it, the D. Do you call it the D? It was in the D of outside penalty. I mean, that was prime Porro, Maddison, so all this stuff that we've just been talking about, top bins. That was a prime... execute if we could have executed that free kick, that could have gone in the back of the net right for us, you know what I mean? So, you know, it was a double whammy. It could have been a double whammy because they could have scored, and actually if he'd have brought a bone for a free kick, we might have might taken the win. So I just think it's one of them, isn't it?
Yeah. Can we just quickly address if we can, guys? Sort
Mickey, of... just to finish off on that point, the referee was John Brooks, by the way, the same guy that sent off Bissouma in the first half versus Luton, 2 yellow cards, but yet he was so reluctant to give any of their guys yellow cards. Mickey van der Ven got a yellow card for hitting the ball away that was crazy. And so, I don't know, certain referees, even though you don't want to be one of these conspiracy theorists, you just feel certain referees have it out for you and just don't referee the game fairly. The way Maddison was getting, and we talk about, again, you know, flair players, creative players, Maddison had no protection today. The way they were just fouling the hell out of him and getting away with it. Even the time Paquetá literally rugby tackled him and then went over to try and shake his hand, and Maddison was like, no chance. Like, I'm not, you know, you knew what you're doing. And he was getting away with it. The referee just needs to do more to protect the players because, like Lee was saying, if one of these guys gets a yellow card, which they rightfully should have, it changes the momentum of their, you know, they can't do that again. And then, you know, Bissouma picks up a cheap yellow card. Our players pick up cheap yellow cards, but the referee doesn't want to do it to the other team. It just is a bit weird.
You know what, guys? Pat, thank you for that point. It's an important point in there. You know, many might forget the fact that he's the same ref from Luton. It's worth making that point in there. Not that Pat's trying to get him demoted at all. I mean, on that point. Look, we'll address the equaliser if we have to from West Ham, because, Jace, I think we spoke about this last month, and you said to me about a month ago, you wait till we play West Ham, they'll be targeting Vicario, they'll be looking at us from corners, and here we are, a month later to the day you're telling me it, and that exactly is what they did. And the people, there's a couple before that where they most certainly were obviously planning on that intent to know that's an area of weakness. Is that a cause for concern generally now at set pieces, or is it again one of those games where teams are experts at set pieces like West Ham? Yeah. this is going to be a problem for us.
I think that's more the case. There are certain teams you play that that really target them. We knew Antonio would be backing in like they did at Everton. And I knew it as soon as Everton did it that West Ham would be looking to do that. But they do that most weeks, West Ham. They pin goalkeepers in. It's their best tactic. It's the way they score most of their goals, really. It's the way they get most of their chances. So they play to their strengths, and they're good at it. The frustration was the one we conceded from wasn't because Vicario gets blocked off. It's because bloke gets a free header. That's the frustration. But I thought over the course, how many corners do they have in the end? Nine corners, West Ham? I actually thought Vicario did pretty well for most of them. We scrambled a few clear. It wasn't pretty to watch, but actually they didn't really threaten a second goal from corners in that respect. I thought we did okay from them, considering the pressure that we were coming under. But no, I mean, Liverpool and teams like that won't do that to us. They'll find other ways to score goals. So I'm not... You can go over the top with it, but West Ham and Everton and teams like that will certainly target you at set pieces, and they've done it today. But they'll do it, like I say, they'll do it to everyone, Rick.
Again, Jay, to make that point there, Mac, maybe come over to you and ask you that, you know, with the games we've got remaining, you know, these are games that teams will want to maybe come out a little bit more, be a bit more expansive, and obviously want to play their football. Do you think we'll be having that situation against opposition to come, Mac, where there will be that almost targeting of us in the box? Because I think that's the one area where I see the frustration online. Many are saying, why are we adopting this zonal marking? Because there's been a number of occasions where Spurs, we've been caught out on it. Is that a concern for you in the way Spurs are conceding from these kind of set pieces?
I mean, what? Is it a concern? Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say no, because I don't want to concede goals. I want to keep clean sheets every week. But it was so obvious that we was going to concede from a set piece. It was just so obvious against West Ham. You and Jason spoke about a month ago, as you just said. Jay said it in the WhatsApp group. Totally agree. We all thumbs up. Yeah, 100% it's going to happen. So, and I think if we're all expecting it, maybe half the players are expecting it as well. And you know what happens if you start believing something, it ends up happening, especially in sports, a weird thing. So, yeah, I suppose it is a concern. I think the biggest thing for me is you know, when you look at the amount of goals that we've conceded, when we've got Mickey van der Ven in the side or when we haven't got Mickey van der Ven in the side, it's quite telling. I think you put a stat up in the preview last show. You might have put it up, I don't know. But that's quite a big of an issue. And people said about Vicario and stuff, but I mean, I think they've both been absolutely outstanding. Like, absolutely outstanding for us. In the way he saves. I mean, that goal that he said, and again, it was offside, but he saved one with his legs. And he's done that two or three times this season already. It come at him right on the line, and he saved it with his legs. I mean, he didn't know it was going to be offside. It was a brilliant save. So, it's a bit of a concern from set pieces. It's weird as well. I think if you go back maybe two seasons, we were absolutely brilliant at set pieces, in defending them and also scoring them. And now we can't seem to take a set piece, and now we can't seem to defend one either. So it is a bit of a concern in that way, mate.
Yeah, I mean, look, in terms of the subs, we mentioned this earlier. They came a lot later than what maybe we would have liked. We saw Kulusevski and Sarr replace Maddison and Bentancur. Second game in a row, Maddison came off when Spurs had been chasing a winner. Started brightly, but did seem to fade. I mean, look, Kulu came on in his desired number eight role. I think, like Lee said there, with no disrespect to Kulusevski, wouldn't have really seen the influence of him coming on. There wouldn't have been a real narrative of a shift in that game that went. So, look, there's work to do there for sure.
Rick, sorry to interrupt you. Just there was a comment on there just coming through about, you know, Lee. Sorry, my namesake, actually. Nice name, Lee. Spurs always play better against top teams. I'm not sure. I don't think Lee's having a dig at West Ham saying they're not a top team or whatever, but there was a point there that you mentioned in that previous question about the whole low block thing. And I'm trying to rack my brains. Out of the defeats that we've had this season, we've lost seven games. Out of them defeats, how many of them teams actually rocked up either at their place or our place with a low block? Or out of the games that we failed to win, so you can put West Ham in that as well now, how many of them games were a low block? Because I remember, Luton game, Rob Edwards come out before the game and said, I'm going to have a go. We're going to have really attack. No, they didn't. They just low blocked. No. That's exactly did.
I can answer that for you, Lee.
Have you got that? Come on, my man. What you got for me?
The only team that you can say beat us without a low block was Brighton. Brighton away, they beat us 4-2. And they don't play low block football. They play football. Yeah. So De Zerbi will play the same kind of game that we play. But other than that, you're right. Losing to Wolves twice in a row. They low blocked the hell out of us. You know, the draw today, West Ham low blocked the hell out of us. And don't get me wrong, West Ham deserve their credit. They played really well defensively, but it's not the brand of football you want to see, is it? And it's not the brand of football that is going to, you know, it's not an attacking brand of football. They were playing for a point, basically. Fulham again did the same thing. So you're right. Other than
Maybe Chelsea, we don't really know what would have happened.
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea was a bit of an anomaly because obviously we were down to 9 men. And when the game was pretty even, to be fair, Chelsea did come to play, but they didn't low block. They came to play. But yeah, it's pretty much only one team that played us with 11 versus 11 and beat us without low blocking. And that was Brighton away.
You know, going back to Sunday, we saw Arsenal go to Manchester City, low block them.
They did.
He couldn't struggle to create a chance. This is Manchester City with De Bruyne's and Haaland's and Bernardo Silva's and Foden's and Grealish coming on. They couldn't create chances against low blocks. You know, when you low block and get 6 or 7 men stretched in a line across the front of the area, it's very difficult to make that angle pass because there's just not the gap. So you end up having to hit a straight ball, it overruns through to the keeper. When Manchester City can struggle against a low block team, then, you know, you're not going to create 5 or 6 glorious chances. What you need to do, which did tonight, is get the early goal, but then don't concede. And then the game goes on. The frustration is we've got the advantage against a low block team by scoring early, but you've got to then be able to hold on to that, keep it clean, and get the second before they come back into the game and force them to come out. But, you can't be too critical against low block. I mean, Liverpool, I've seen Liverpool struggle against low block teams.
Everybody does. I was coming in from a criticism of low block. It's just we played low block for like 5 years, so we don't want to see that so much. But I'm not necessarily being critical of low block or the way other teams play. It's more about the fact that we struggle against a low block. The way we play our football, this isn't a new thing. We've always struggled against a low block. Under Poch with us 5.5 years, we could not break a low block team down. I remember being at Wembley, I've said this so many times, 93rd minute, Eriksen winner against Brighton, ironically, that's when they did play low block. And you know, Fulham, you know, like, you know, the 93rd minute winner when Winks ghosted in at the back post from a Clinton and G cross or whatever it was. This was classic low block stuff. And we were ending up finding a way. And people keep comparing us to the likes of Man City and Liverpool. We're not Man City and Liverpool. No one said that we are anywhere near Man City and Liverpool. But Man City have struggled against low blocks this season. Like Crystal Palace, they drew 2-2. Low block, mate. Do you see what I mean? And they were ahead in that game. And they come back with a couple of set pieces or a Mateta header. You know, it's classic. This is why the Premier League is so good. It's why it's so competitive. It's why, because you don't know. No one could call that game tonight. It was, well, to be fair, Marlon did, but you know, it was a 1-1. But you know, no one could. It's hard to call that game. That's why I started the show tonight by saying, you know, it's an enjoyable game. Like if you're neutral, it goes.
Oh, you're neutral, yeah.
It goes different, right? It's classic Premier League.
I think it's also fair to say that despite our struggles against low block sides, we've only won 2 games less than Manchester City. And not everyone's come at us. So we have found a solution a lot of times. You know, we found the solution against Palace. We found the solution against Brentford. We found the solution against Luton on Saturday. We have found the solution a lot of times this season, more than we're given credit for, that's for sure. Hence why we're 5th in the table, not 15th. You know, when I read the criticism of all the things we can't do, and we can't do this, and we can't do that, we don't beat low blocks, and we're not scoring enough goals, and we're conceding too many. And I look at the table, I think, fucking hell, we must be 17th. And I look, hey, we're 5th. 2 wins less than Manchester City.
Crazy. But if you think about some of them games like earlier in the season, where maybe teams hadn't worked out to a certain degree how we were going to play, and Burnley's a classic example. Burnley now have started to pick up some points or some results and fair play. I do like Vincent Kompany and the way they've set up. But earlier on in the season, they were getting absolutely tonked by every team. And earlier, even a couple of weeks ago, though they were still getting tonked. But we went to Turf Moor and bashed them 5-2 because they didn't low block. And that's perfect for us. You know, when you go to a superior or a team who plays superior football, keeps the ball grinding you, relentlessness, like a Liverpool, like a Man City, Arsenal are doing it, Spurs are now doing it, you have to try and find a way. And it like you say, it's so compact. It's easy for us when we're looking at a bird's eye view, almost over the pitch, going, oh, pass to him. But when you go pitch down level and you're trying to see the pass, all you see is claret and blue shirts in front of you. And it's tough. And I know the Premier League players and all that, of course, I understand all of that stuff. But it's a lot more difficult, especially when you factor in the context of where we are with a brand new manager, brand new system, brand new players, blah, 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 like going over old ground. But see where I'm coming from. That's why I'm excited. I'm excited for the games to come. Let's pit our wits against some of the best. The frustrating thing is, you know, when we play as bad as we did against Fulham, because it now means we have to go and get at least a point at Stamford Bridge or Anfield if we're going to try and get into that kind of 73, 75 points type scenario. 72 points will get you top four this year. So, you know, you don't have to worry about if Villa win or this, that and the other. You just need to worry about, can we get 72 points? Because that will get you top four. And, you know, if you want higher than that, 75 points, we're going to have to take points off of Liverpool and, you know, or City. And that's going to annoy everybody because we might end up giving the league to Arsenal if we do that. And that's a horrendous, look at Rick's face.
Yeah, it's horrendous
thought, isn't it? It's a horrendous thought. So.
Yeah, it's a horrible thought. But obviously, ultimately, right now, we need to get as many points as possible. It's crazy because, like you said, you know, if we beat Liverpool or Man City, which I want us to do, we are effectively helping Arsenal. So it is a disgusting thing to think about. But unfortunately, we need to think of ourselves first and hopefully they mess up in their own games. But it's funny, Lee, because going back to what you said, a guy called
That's why you can't ask them, is to beat them when we play them.
Can't we just do that?
We need to. So there's a guy called Paul Tutor, and he replied to one of the Last Word on Spurs, basically, you know, the podcast, saying, God help us versus Woolwich, City and Liverpool, basically talking about our performance today, how we're going to fare against them. And I said, very different games that we played very differently. Arsenal, City and Liverpool will not play or set up the way West Ham did today. And that's exactly what Lee said. Like, I don't know why people are comparing. It's like chalk and cheese. West Ham are not going to... Well, Liverpool, Arsenal and City will try and play and win the game. Same way we do. They're not going to low block us. I mean, I know Arsenal did against Man City, so you never know. But realistically, it's not going to be that type of football. So, yeah, I'm relishing those games, man. I really am.
Brennan, congratulations. How do you feel, first of all, about the point and that Spurs performance?
Yeah, I think about the point, we're disappointed. I think for large parts of the game, I feel like we dominated, got into some really good areas, had some good possession around their box and lack that little bit of cutting edge, especially in the second half where we feel like we got into a lot of good positions. But with the performance, we're reasonably happy. I think it's just that last bit we need to keep working on.
A goal for you after a couple of assists as well at the weekend. How do you feel your game is improving under Ange Postecoglou?
Yeah, I think every week for me, it's just more and more learning. I think coming to this club, there was so much to learn for me as a player and so much development needed. So, yeah, every week I feel more confident and get into better areas. So if I can keep trying to score and assist, I'm very happy with that.
I think that's what I've been really impressed with. You're running off the ball and your timing of your runs to get into that sort of centre-forward position in many ways. A lot of wingers stay out wide and they're not there on that back post, but you're doing it really well.
Yeah, I mean, the manager makes it very clear if you're not there, he definitely lets you know. So for me, in my first couple of months, I wasn't in them positions. And when we do the meetings after the game, he's always drawing arrows into positions that I should be coming into. And as time went on, I feel like I made it a conscious effort to try and keep getting in the positions because it will drop for me. And today it did, which I'm happy about.
How exciting is it, Brennan, playing with all these great players? You know, it's such a fabulous style of football. Where do you think this team can go to? You think you could be challenging next year for honours?
Yeah, it's definitely what we're striving for. I think the style of play is unbelievable. I think there's some areas which we definitely need to cut out. I think today conceding from a set piece like that just isn't acceptable, because when you're dominating the game for the first 20 minutes and you concede a goal like that, they start getting up for it, the crowd gets up for it, so we kind of shot ourselves in the foot. But onto the team. It's a very exciting team, a lot of good young players, a lot of quality, and we just need more time to gel, I think. And we still got, I don't know how many games this season, where we want to finish as strong as we can.
And you took a little knock. Is the ice
it's
is on
a
your
very
knee.
Big bandage. Should anyone be worried? Okay?
Yeah, I think it's all good. I think just from the corner, I'm not sure who it was, but I got a kick in my knee and it kind of stiffened up a bit. So, but it's fine. I'm good.
Can you give us a bit more insight into what Ange Postecoglou asks from his wide players and how different that is to anything you've been used to?
Yeah, it's definitely different to what I've been used to. I think, firstly, he just wants us to be high all the time and wide to try and push them back. And he just demands different movements to get onto the ball and be in the right areas, because when we got a striker like Sonny, who's not probably an out-and-out striker, he can drop deep, he can do it all, to be honest. So when he kind of vacates them areas in the middle, he makes sure that us wingers have to get into them positions. And I feel like as time goes by, I think Timo's got into good areas and I'm trying to get into them areas as well. So that's what he demands of us wingers.
For Son, it was a 400th appearance tonight. What's he like to play with? What's he like as your captain?
Oh, it's an honour to play with Sonny, honestly. I think day in, day out, he like leads in his personality and his quality and how hard he works and how he is as a person. I think everyone knows how nice of a guy he is. And he's also very demanding, because a player like that much quality, he demands the ball, because he's the one who can score out of nothing. And he demands it of all of us to try and get in the ball. And he speaks really well for a captain as well. And I think overall as a person, he's just a great guy.
And you've still got the top three to play as well in this running. How confident are you in the fact that you might be able to qualify for the Champions League? We still don't know, of course, if fifth place will be enough.
Yeah, I think it's exciting. I think we kind of thrive at the opportunities of playing against the best teams. We want to test ourselves against everyone, because we don't change for anyone. We try and keep playing our football. And we've got a lot of tough games coming up, and which we're really excited for. And hopefully we can get as many points out of it to finish the season as strong as we can.
Thanks for coming out to talk to us, and congratulations on the point tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks,
very much,
Brennan.
Guys.
Well done.
Thank you, mate.
Nice well done. All the best.
Well done, buddy.
Cheers.
Brilliant.
Thank
nice to
you.
Meet you.
Phoenix 51 is a powerful employee technology enabling organizations to make data-driven decisions at every stage of the employee journey, from hiring through benchmarking and development too. The platform provides detailed analytics on the most important asset in your business, your people, enabling organizations not only to make the correct hiring decisions, but also how to benchmark, train, and retain them. Phoenix 51, powering your people decisions through every part of the employee journey.
Hi there, this is Russ Williams from The Last Word on Spurs. A few years ago, I researched and wrote a book about the huge physical and mental benefits of one simple form of exercise. It's called How to Walk Yourself Healthy and Happy, and it's helped thousands of people all over the world. Now, I've created an audio course which helps people maybe like you prevent 5 serious life-threatening conditions and protect themselves for the future. For example, this form of exercise is the closest thing to a silver bullet for conditions like high blood pressure and high cholesterol levels. If you're over 40, this is the information you need and the simple plan to protect yourself and get results. Risk-free, visit walkyourselfhealthyandhappy.com/audio-course or click the website link in my profile on X.
I've got to say, some seem to suggest they feel I've got an agenda against Timo Werner. Let me just be very clear where I see the Timo Werner situation for me. I've said this on a couple of the last shows, just to be very, very clear. We know there's an activation clause there, $15 million for Timo Werner. My thoughts are on this with Timo Werner. Look, again, tonight he's got an assist. And again, there's no doubt about it. I think we all agree, apart from the assist, didn't really contribute much to proceedings. My feeling for me is that if that $15 million is going to stop us from going to buy a more explosive, proven winger that can play in and around the front three, I would rather not spend the $15 million to activate Timo Werner's clause. And I'd rather put that $15 million to a player like Eneze. Now, I don't know if Eneze wants to come to the club. I'm only just merely putting it out there that, for me personally, I've got nothing against Timo Werner. I think, look, if he goes on between now and the remaining 8 games and does contribute a goal and a goal or assist, you know, I think he's well worthy of the activation of that clause. But my only suggestion for me is that if that player is going to stop us from buying a better player to improve the first team, I would not be behind the signing of Timo Werner. That's not me saying he's not a great lad. That's not me saying he's not a nice kid. But it comes a time where, you know, football's not just about being a nice kid or a nice bloke. It's about being brutal to say, can this guy improve the squad? So I want to do a very quick round the table, yes or no. From what you've seen so far, Pat, Timo Werner, would you be signing on a permanent from what you've seen?
No, I wouldn't. And just quickly, like you said, I mean, I don't understand why we have to, oh, he's 15 million, it's a bargain. At the end of the day, you want the best players playing for the club, players that are going to improve the first 11 and improve. I think he's been good enough. He's better than obviously the players we had before he came in. But what I'm seeing now is pretty much what we saw at Chelsea and at Leipzig. And the reason why essentially both clubs got rid of him, he's not good enough to really push the needle and move us forward. You know, other than the assist today, he did jack all. So right now, no.
Okay. Jace, and I maybe phrase this question differently. Are we going to get someone better for 15 million in terms of a goal or an assist every other game, maybe, or I'll phrase it like that for maybe those maybe don't understand the point I'm making? Or is he an improvement in the squad or first team for you?
I don't think you're going to get much better for 15 million, but I'd like you, if we were going to go and sign a 50 million player for that position and suddenly we've only got 35 million of it left and we finish short on a bid for somebody because we've spent the 15, I'd be fed up. So you're right, I think you want the best possible players and you want as much funds to do that as possible. And if 15 million stops you doing it, because you will have a budget, you know, people won't like it, but you will have, whether it's enough of a budget, you're given a budget. And if you finish short with your budget because you've wasted 15 or you've spent 15 million of it, there's your problem. So he'd be, you know, if it got down to August the 31st, you might think, well, we haven't got anything that we need, so he'll do. But I certainly wouldn't be rushing to do the activation clause, that's for sure. I'd be looking around for a better option.
Yeah, the problem we've got on this, Mac, and I come around to you, is that Spurs have only got a certain amount of time before they have to activate this clause. I'm led to believe it's early June because Leipzig want to answer on it fairly quickly. Otherwise, for them, it then delays them potentially either selling the player or loaning him back out to another respective club.
The only thing with that, Rick, is if Tottenham don't buy him for 15 million, it's probably unlikely many will. So that's not to say you couldn't go back in late July and do the deal again, because I bet he's still sitting there at Leipzig and people will be thinking, well, you've now not been fancied by three clubs.
Okay. I mean, Macca, give us the final view on you for Werner. Have you seen enough to sign him permanently, in your opinion?
I completely agree across all three of you and a lot of the comments in the on the channel and what the listeners are saying in terms of through Twitter and stuff. Not for me, not right now. I mean, nice guy, whatever, but the guy's got to turn them. He's got to take his man on. Like we need somebody on that left wing that's going to drop a shot. Like we've had them through the years, Gareth Bales, David Ginola's, going all the way back, Hoddles, Waddle on that side. I mean, we've always had players in this Spurs side across the take on players, drop a shoulder, have a go, run at them. Lennon on the other side. Now, Lennon got a lot of criticism when he was there, but he always used to take his man on, try and beat his man, get a yard, get a crossing. You know, we need to see that from him. He's either being coached to do exactly what he's being told to do. What I saw from him today, like Pat said, at the beginning of the show, is I saw him walking. I saw him jogging around. I didn't even see him tracking back to his man. I'm thinking, what are you doing, son? You know, he hangs on that, like, kind of that final defender, and you're thinking, go on, son. And the ball don't come because he doesn't make the run. He kind of backs off. I just want the bloke to get in behind. I want him to take a man on. I want him to drop a shoulder and go left, go right, like do a couple of step overs. Do something that's going to, you know, quick feet in the box, get a penalty. Nothing, he ain't got that. I ain't seen any of that.
Why has he come in? And he came in because we've had an injury to Solomon all season. Whether Solomon would have been any good or not, we've not really had a chance to see Solomon other than that Burnley away game. But Solomon was out. Sonny was out at the time at Asia Cup. Richarlison wasn't fit at the time. Kulu wasn't really doing much. So he was an option.
He's
been fine as that option. Let's be honest, he's contributed the odd goal and the odd assist. Yeah. So he's done the job he kind of brought in to do, but he wasn't really brought in to be the big first team player, was he?
No, that's true. That is true. But that's the question is from Rick, wasn't it? You know, would you sign him? And we've all said no at this stage. That said, let me just caveat all of that because context is wonderful. If he goes and scores an assist in his next, you know, nine games, he starts every game, he scores a couple, he scores an absolute worldie to win against Arsenal.
Absolutely.
He goes up to Anfield and scores a little pink header. The wee man gets up against Van Dijk, back post, and puts a little header in and whatever.
Has he got a ladder with him? Has he to put on the pitch when he's got
exactly
when he jumps up?
Exactly my point. So you know that's the thing. Like if the bloke finishes, the question really should be if he finishes on, you know, how many goal involvements has he got, Pat? Oh. If he finishes on, say, I don't know, 15 goal involvements or 20 goal involvements,
he's got 5 goal involvements now. So he got an assist today. So he's got 3 assists and 2 goals. And I think that's in 10 games. So it's a goal involvement every other game. So it's not as bad as... The thing is...
But he's doing what he does in the team. That is what he was doing
at Chelsea. He is.
He's come in as a stopgap, and he's been a good stopgap. When you're looking at the bigger picture and you're asking us, would we sign in next year to be like really pushing us forward? The answer is no, if we're being honest. Like, if we have ambitions and really want the club to push forward, Timo Werner isn't it. Is he a good stopgap? Has he done a good job while Son was away at the Asia Cup, while Solomon's literally been out the whole season? Perisic, unfortunately, injured the whole season. Charleston in and out. Yes, he has. So, you know, the context is there for all to see it. Let's not go crazy because he was never going to be a world beater, but we do want world beaters going forward.
Yeah. I think you can argue, Pat, like you're saying there, based on the stats you've read out there, Pat, he's doing his job, what, of course, is, you know, been asked to do. It's whether you feel that player is good enough for you to really have a direct influence in that first team next season. Can I just say that I think a lot will, again, play out in these next 8 or 9 games. It may also give us an indication of what Spurs' intentions are for next season based on where they do finish and based on their summer transfer window if Timo Werner is signed. But like, you know, Lee has said there, let's get behind the guy. Look, he's got some huge games to have a massive sound of Spurs show. He goes and scores against Chelsea, against Arsenal, against Liverpool. I think there will be a clamour to go and sign him. So, look, I mean, what I do just want to finish on is Bissouma.
By the way, he's definitely scoring against Chelsea. Like, you put that, bookmark that, 100% he is scoring against Chelsea because they gave him so much grief for not being able to finish. He is going to finish them at Stamford Bridge. Do not even worry about that.
They've had one of their seasons, Chelsea, where you'd think that would happen to them. But let's hope, let's keep our fingers crossed on that. I want to close, if I can, on Bissouma very quickly because I think that's a player that has been heavily criticised in the last couple of months. And I just feel, maybe I might be wrong here, I just feel we got a glimpse of hopefully that Bissouma that we saw in those first 7-8 games of the season where I think many, again, have suggested tonight Mickey van der Ven was the one that let us down for the goal. But I think if you go and watch it back, this is the only criticism of Bissouma, I will say. The player did seem to ghost in between Bissouma for West Ham's equaliser. But apart from that, really, look, there was nothing else you could say Bissouma did wrong in terms of on the night. I think, you know, the rest of his game was much better. He came off with 10 minutes to go, but mopped up plenty in the first half. He made a number of numerous tackles as well. I just want to hope that Bissouma is the player we're going to see for these remaining games of the season, because we know, Pat, come over you if I can, that, you know, this is where places can be up for grabs now between now and the summer, and we'll be looking to see where can we improve, where can we invest. And he said it before, that kind of 6 and 8 positions are ones that we are going to, you know, potentially look at. So Bissouma's going to now hopefully take the gauntlet between now and the end of the season and have some decent performances like he showed in that second half, right?
Yeah, I thought, like I said earlier, Ricky, even before we started touching on particular subjects, I thought Bissouma played really well today. I thought the midfield had the right balance and the right temperament. Unfortunately, obviously, we didn't create or unlock the defence. But in terms of getting on the ball, making things happen, dictating play, you know, picking passes, spreading the width of the pitch and all of these type of things you want from your defender, plus making some really good tackles and breaking up play, I thought Bissouma did well. And he definitely had an impact on the game, you know. And in some of the recent games, that's what we've been saying. Bissouma just disappeared and fizzled out. I thought he played really well today. That is the Bissouma we want to see going forward. Obviously, he can still add more to his game. But it was definitely a glimpse of the pre-Luton, if that's what you want to call it, Bissouma. So, yeah, Ricky, I thought I was impressed with what I saw today. maybe not impressed because we know what he can do. That's probably going a bit too far. But I was happy with what I saw, and that's what we need to see going forward.
Maybe a reminder then, maybe, Jace, to you, that the player is still in there that we hoped was there, and that the 8-9 games at the start of the season wasn't a fluke, and we can get that player back that we saw in the second half against West Ham. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. And it, I mean, you know, he's been left out of the Marley squad. Mm. And the criticism of his national, I mean, let's be honest, Premier League player can't get in Marley squad, no disrespect, but, you know, you feel like, no, but you feel like pretty much any Premier League player in a top 10 club is playing for their national size, aren't they? Because of the availability of those players. So, you know, if Marley are in a situation where they can leave and leave Bissouma out, it tells you that Bissouma's not been doing what he should be doing for them as well. So it's not just his Tottenham form that's been a problem. And by all accounts, he was a bit peeved at being left out of the squad, but perhaps that's also giving him a nod, and Angel's there saying, look, Eve, you've got to get your form back, mate. And it was better today, that's for sure, much better.
Follow on to you, Macca. That result for you, does it change anything going into these final 8 games, 9 games left of the season? Is it still business as usual? Like I think you said earlier, we're going to have to pick up points maybe at places where maybe you wouldn't have backed us to Anfield, yeah. Stamford Bridge. But we've gone away to the Emirates, we've got a point, we've gone away to Old Trafford, we've got a point. This side have predominantly played better against the bigger sides, right?
Yeah, we went to the Etihad, got 3-3, didn't we?
Yep.
That as well. And we've got a history up there of winning. We won there last season as well. The season before. I think the Fulham result, the Wolves results, the ones that we went through earlier, are the ones that you're kind of expected to win. What it essentially does is it just makes you, we have to do it the hard way, don't we, Spurs? And when I say do it, what is it? It depends what you want to do. Like you said earlier, is it top four? Is it top three? Is it top five? Is it, you know, is it in Europe? Like all fans' expectations are slightly different. You know, we put a poll out in a week around where do you think we're finished in terms of points total, not in terms of actual top three, top five, top whatever. Most people, it was 38% split actually between 61 to 70 points and 71 to 75 points, which I thought was quite interesting. So again, no one can really call it. There's thousands of votes actually on it, so thanks for being involved. So I thought that was quite interesting. So yeah, look, I think Bissouma showed flashes, but I think Ange has been very, very honest, and he talks so well, doesn't he? He's been very honest in all of his assessments of the games, and it's been Tottenham season, which is flashes. We've had flashes in games of 10, 15-minute spells or 20-minute spells. We've had flashes of like, oh, we're on a run here. You know, the first 10 games of the season were absolutely amazing. We're thinking, could we? And then we have that absolute flash in the pan of like four,
five, Not all of us were.
Four, five, well, so, some of you never will. Do you know what I mean? That's part of the problem. You're part of the problem. I'm talking positivity.
That's also very true, Macca. That we never also think that. That also is part of the problem.
Yeah, yeah. I always remember the Fulham banner under Roy Hodgson when they got to the cup final in Europe, and it's like, believe, you have to believe, and they still didn't win the cup final. Anyway, you know, point being is that, you know, you've got all of that scenario, you know, the games in front of you. I just think that we've done it in the past. We've gotten to top four, you know, with the Peter Crouch header, and with Harry under the Etihad. We beat Arsenal and Chelsea in that run. We've got these big games that are coming up. We've made it harder for ourselves. That's the Tottenham way. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we're going to get back to the Anfield and get back to the Stamford Bridge and Arsenal come and batter us. But it also wouldn't surprise me as well if we go up to Anfield, we get a point. We did it under Antonio. It wouldn't surprise me at all if we go to Stamford Bridge and Werner gets the winner. It wouldn't surprise me if we batter Arsenal at home in the next few weeks. It just wouldn't surprise me. And that's our season. And I think at the end of the day, you know, it feels like I'm just sucking up to Ange, but this is because this is what he says. But I agree with him.
Yeah,
we finish where we finish. It is what it is. But we are a better team, a better setup, and a better foundation today than what we was at the end of last season. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And we have made strides moving forward. And you know, I said at the beginning with Jason, we were on the first show I think of the season. We both said we think we've finished top five. Then when we had that brilliant start, I said, actually, I think we could finish in the top three. But before the ball was kicked, I said top five, and I still think we're finishing the top five. I actually still think we finished top four, but that's, you know, that's the reality. does it matter Champions League? I'm not sure.
Well, if you notice, I've stopped asking everyone the top four question because Ange has kind of made that now redundant. It's more about the progression
but
and the growth of the team.
We want top tier, top table European football, don't we? Like, that's why Jason's nodding his head, that we want to see ourselves. But you're slightly different, Rick, aren't you? You're kind of like, from a development point, what's wrong with Europa?
I'll be honest with you, I say it again, I look at tonight and no disrespect to, again, some of the players that are out there. I think, again, West Ham are a side that have been in and around the Europa League, Europa Conference League. They've gone and won it. And I look at us, and I think if you put us in that Europa League under Ange next season, I think we could have a real genuine chance of winning it. And that's why, again, look, maybe I'm a little bit different to a lot of people. For me, the cups are everything. I'm not going to keep going bleating on about this, but for me, the cups are more special than finishing in the top four. That's just me as a fan. I've always been that way. Give me a trip to Wembley over finishing in the top four. I'd take my chances on that. So I'm a little bit different to maybe a lot of fans out there that, top four is more of a generational, it's our everything.
Isn't it, with the Champions League? Because people say like, we're not going to win it. What's the point? But people were saying that in 2019.
Yeah.
And we got to the final. And Jace, I was there. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. But I think
you have to correct me if I'm wrong here, Pat or Lee or Jace. You have to tell me that. I think there's a little bit difference in terms of the way this Champions League format's going to be done next season. Am I right in saying that because of the way it's formatted, that if you were to go out of the Champions League, you wouldn't drop into the Europa and therefore you're actually out of the actual competition that you go in, which I think changes a lot of people's mindsets about next season. Only for me personally, that's why, again, I'm thinking that I wouldn't mind being in the Europa League because I think we've got a genuine chance of winning it. Whereas being in the Champions League, when I see what I see at the moment, and it's not for me negatively, grating on the squad here because it's a young team that's progressing. What I don't want to do is go in the Champions League and then go out of the first round. I think I'd like to see it be in a European competition where we can genuinely progress. The players can all improve under a manager that's going to be even better next season. And that's why, just for me personally, obviously I wouldn't mind a Europa League. I know for you, Jace, I know you love the top tier, the Real Madrid, the Barcelona. And for you, you'd like it to be in the Champions League, right, Jace? Even though I said I wouldn't do this debate. Now I'm in this bloody debate.
I hear this all the time, we're not ready for the Champions League. But, at the start of the season, there'll be 36 teams in next year's Champions League. Don't tell me there's 35 teams that can win it other than Tottenham. There's plenty of teams in it that aren't ready for the Champions League. Are you telling me Aston Villa will be ready for the Champions League if they're in it?
No,
Man United
right.
Be ready for the Champions League. Or West Ham be? Would Newcastle be? No. But you want to be competing at the highest level. And I think there is still a drop-down stage of it next season where you would drop into the Europa, because I think the Europa League is done in the same way on this Swiss format where depending in which block of eight you finish. But I think you want to be playing the best level of football you possibly can. And that helps. It should help you attract better players. It should help you retain your better players. It increases your profile as a club. I get what you're saying about the Europa League, but would Tottenham try and win it? West Ham, in fairness, tried to win it. I think Aston Villa might well try to win it, but we'll see. But if you actually try to win them.
I think the only difference for me why I think Spurs would take it more seriously is, with no disrespect, we know Mourinho did take Europe very seriously because we saw what he'd done in the conference, the Europa League, the Champions League. But you do feel with those kind of managers, the Contes, the Mourinhos, they do feel they want to play in that elite competition. Whereas someone like Ange, although he's been really well-travelled, I get the feeling that he wouldn't want to, dismiss any form of European competition. I feel that he would drill that into the players motivationally wise, that these are important competitions for the progress of not just the players, but the overall squad. And that's why I've had a real drilling emphasis on the fact that Europa League wouldn't be the end of the world.
All I mean, Rick, when you look at the end of this season coming up, we'll play Arsenal on a weekend, we'll play Liverpool on a weekend, going for a top four role. So we're going to leave out best players for those games because we're playing AZ67 Alkmaar in a quarter-final or a semi-final. They won't do it.
You're
going to do it. As all fans, we might well want to do it, but they are not going to. And I tell you what, if we leave players out for those games, we beat AZ Alkmaar and then lose at home to Arsenal, it'll be, why the fucking hell did they play that team against AZ when we should have been playing against Arsenal? That's what happens, Rick. Fans want to win every single game. And there'll be no excuses made if you lose a quarter-final of the Europa League trying to win it and you then lose to a big game at a weekend. It just doesn't work that way. But the club Daniel Levy will want top four. We'll want Champions League football. Of course he will. And so that will override things, mate. Yeah. It will do.
That's been the nice thing before. I'm going to let Pat close this debate. That's been the nice thing with Ange, that he's made it very, very clear and abundant in the last few press conferences that he don't really care about the top four narrative. He's here to win, and he's here to actually genuinely go for a title run, which I think has been so refreshing that when you hear Conte go, it was a miracle what we made the top four. Or, you know, Jose, the club's ambition is to finish in the top four. Or dare I say even Pochettino to some degree say, you know, the ambition is to finish in the top four. Ange has not once said, my ambition personally is to finish in the top four. And that's why it's been so refreshing having somebody there, and Leah said it in the past, that doesn't set a ceiling. Anything is achievable. And that's what has been so refreshing about this manager, and why there was that almost in those first 8-9 games that we all got carried away with Leah to some degree on the train of could we? Because Ange never ruled it out. Ange never ruled it out.
Rick, that's why he's going to Liverpool, mate, as you predicted. Oh, that's... Ange.
Don't you start. But hey, let's close it with you, mate. Do you have a say on this quick debate for you?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle in the sense of if we finish strongly and we obviously beat Liverpool, Man City, Arsenal, and we finish on a real high, then I know that we've got the quality to be in the Champions League and I want us to be in there. But if we're stuttering like we are kind of at the moment and our form's quite patchy, like you, Ricky, I'd rather we be in the Europa League, a tournament I feel would be better suited to win with a manager like Ange Postecoglou who will take it seriously and we go out and win it. That's no disrespect to the players, but I'd rather we be in a competition where I feel that we can actually go and win it as opposed to just being part of the makeup and part of the furniture. Go all out and win it. I know Jason's saying, will we, you know, prioritise that later on in the season? I'm hoping that Ange would. I'm hoping that we obviously get a few more players in, have a deeper squad, and we go and win it. Because how long has it been without a trophy? And I know, again, Lee said in 2019, no one expected us to get to the Champions League final. It was fantastic. We got there, but ultimately we didn't win it. And now it's about putting trophies on the table and trophies in the cabinet. So my mindset is a bit different. It's in a sense of I'm happy to go for Champions League football if we finish strongly and it looks like we deserve to be there. Because if we finish fourth and we finish fourth, you know, in a good manner, of course we want to be there. But if we're stuttering and kind of patchy and all of that, and we finish fifth and we're in there, it's not going to feel the same. And we're not going to be in no way, shape or form are we going to win it.
One thing I'd say, Rick, is the context of what Ange has talked about yesterday in his presser. He thinks we should be having a title challenge next season. So seven games and we're in a title challenge. Do you want to beat AZ67 Alkmaar and throw the league title away?
This Premier League is bonkers. It is a bonkers league, man. Like every team can beat every other team. It's just bonkers. It's nothing. There's no other league like it. And that's why, yes, the passion and enthusiasm, the irateness, the annoyance, everything that we go through. But it is a bonkers league, man, this league. And it just doesn't surprise you. How can Fulham smash us to pieces 3-0 and then be 3-1 down at Sheffield United at the weekend, only to come back and draw 3-3 and then lose to 4, whatever it was, to Forest tonight? I mean, or 3-1 tonight. I mean, it's just bonkers. Yeah. The league's bonkers, mate.
When you say everyone can beat everyone, sorry, we can't beat Chelsea.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's still got to be written, Jace. Who knows? Thank you so much for all your genuine, incredible support for the show. It wasn't the result we wanted. But listen, we will keep marching on from Lee, from Jace, from Patty, from myself. We've been the last one on Spurs. Keep safe, keep well. We're back with you soon. And as always, come on, you Spurs. Sports Social Podcast Network.